Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, July 9th, 2001. In the Koinonia Creekside this evening is Molly Davis. Today's session number is DAM-2001-01, and it's titled Celebrate the Gift. Let's listen in.
Time is 6:20. For those of you that I haven't met, my name is Molly Davis. I live in Vancouver, Washington. I'm married to the rock guy, Tom Pearson, to his class. And just a little aside, I met him by answering a personal ad that said romantic scientist. And I thought, what is that? like a romantic engineer. So if there's any engineers here, sorry. But between the two of us, we have four teenage daughters. We have two 19-year-olds and two 15-year-olds. And all of our pets are female, so it is an incredibly hormonal household. Tom really weathers those monthly fluctuations that seem to just race through our household. I am professionally, I'm a corporate trainer. I work with businesses on communication issues and conflict resolution, creative thought, but primarily being a mom is what I love to do. And you can go ahead and start the tape. That would be great. This series is called Celebrate the Gift, and it was put together actually by my dearest friend, Christine, friends for 25 years, and we have always presented it in workshop form, together, always, together. And so I love the theme of called by name. I think that's a fabulous theme, but I do not always like it when God calls my name. And so we were headed up here on the boat, well actually a week ago Christine called and she, because of various things, said I can't go. And so I hung up the phone and I said, that's great, we'll do our workshop another time. And I took all my stuff out of my Holden box and left it at home, all my workshop stuff, with the firm resolve that I was not going to do this workshop. So we got on the boat, and God said, Molly, and I said, I am so busy right now. I'm meeting new people, I'm looking for bears up there, and he said, Molly. And it became very clear to me that this was something that I should and wanted, actually, to do on my own. But it was just kind of an interesting start to this whole theme of when God calls our name. And one of the things I like about that theme is it resonates with the idea of living authentic lives. And what that means, I think, is to understand the gifts and talents that God has given us, our strengths, but also to understand our dark side and understand our weaknesses, our faults, our imperfections. And by embracing all of that, we learn to celebrate the life that is beneath us right now, rather than something else that we're looking for outside of ourselves. And I think one of the reasons that we titled this Celebrate the Gift is that we really have firmly come to believe, and I have, that ordinary life is the gift that God gives us. It is the place where we find causes and reasons for celebration. And it's the day in, day out, ordinary, one foot after the other place, that those gifts that He wants us to experience are found. And in fact, when I think about saying ordinary life, I think, again, that's almost an oxymoron, because how could anything about life in any aspect be ordinary? And so that's really the context. So tonight's session is really, I want to take kind of a wide-angle view of this idea of celebrating the gift and look at the places that we can find wonderful gifts and treasures that sometimes we miss. And part of how I'm going to do that is to introduce you to the voices of some women. Christine and I, a few years ago, and I'll talk about this, put together a book called Letters to Our Daughters. And in that process, met ordinary women who had very extraordinary things to say to their own daughters that they found in the midst of challenge and loss and heartache, as well as triumph and joy. So I'm going to use their voices tonight to really introduce some of that to you. And this is certainly meant to be a dialogue. And I have put in some questions. I'll pose some questions to you and have places for dialogue. My husband's been instructed to keep the conversation moving if it gets slow. So we'll be fine. But anyway, if in before that, if you want to interrupt, I want you to bring your experiences and your thoughts and your questions into this discussion, because that is really what is wonderful about these kinds of sessions in the Holden. I also know we all just ate dinner, and so napping will not be considered rude. If okay? So I kind of have to go back, actually, as to where this all started. It actually all started in my one and only other visit to Holden, this journey of understanding ordinary life. I'd come just as a guest, and my friend Christine was here to teach an art class. And I was just along for the ride. And she said, you know, we're doing this wonderful book called The Artist's Way. Has anybody gone through that book?
Two or three times.
Oh my gosh. Well, she said, why don't you just go through this book along with the class and see what happens. Just come, you can be my assistant, because I don't have a creative bone that way in my body. You can hold the pots for me or whatever. So one day I came down to the library with The Artist's Way and thought, well, this will be kind of fun. And her premise is that we are all created by a creator, therefore our bent as human beings is to be creative in some form. And she has you do lots of writing and kind of excavating your life to find that voice that sometimes we leave behind that would tell you what it is that you want to do, where that creativity lies. I started writing and within about 6 minutes was sobbing. I mean that kind that pulls your stomach inside out crying. And I can remember slamming the book shut, walking outside, and literally shaking my fist at God and saying, I did not agree to do this. I did not agree to open myself up to this kind of pain. I don't want to ask these questions. Isn't that a great recommendation for a book? But I kept going. I decided there was value in continuing on. And in all this writing, what continued to come up for me was, I'd like to quit my job. I'd like to write a book, and I'd like to be a public speaker. Well, none of those were things that I could do without great fear and trepidation, but it kept coming up. So I went home from Holden, and as I kept journaling, I had this same three things kept coming up, and so I came to Tom. We had this blended family. We had just bought this enormous home that depended upon my income to pay for it, as well as his. And I said, gee, dear, I think I wanted to quit my job. I don't know why, but I think I want to quit my job. And fortunately, he looked at me and said, you know what, we'll make it work. You do what you need to do. So I quit, not knowing what I was going to do. And about a month after that, Christine and I got away, like we try and do once a year, no husbands, no kids, down at the beach, all the chocolate, mushy videos, take out food, you can, you know, that kind of weekend. And we were sitting one morning over coffee, and we got talking about our first 40-something years, and talked about the things that we had thought were important, that we had learned weren't, and realized that we had this choice. We had another 40-something years to spend, and how would we spend those on the things that truly mattered, and in fact, what truly mattered. And the more our conversation went, we knew that for us that meant our relationships, and it meant our daughters. And so we began talking about, as mothers, what we wanted for our children. And that conversation began to grow, and we thought, wouldn't it be amazing to gather together around this table and conversation mothers from all over the world, different circumstances, and hear what they'd have to say. And if we did that, would there be common threads that we would all identify with? And we thought, wouldn't it be amazing to bring a mother from a Palestinian mother and an Israeli mother and a mother from Columbine High School and those of us that send our kids off to school every day together. And they'd all say, every day we send our children out and we pray they come home safely. Wouldn't there be common threads that we would all identify with? So we thought, how do you do that? And we thought a letter. The written communication, the written word is a wonderful way to do that. So by the time we left the beach, we had a title for this project. Didn't know what it was going to be, but we called it Letters to Our Daughters. We had this title. And on the way home, we had probably the most significant conversation that we've ever had, and it was about fear. And it was about that voice. We've thought of a lot of things together as friends that we would like to do. And we always thought, I think if we could make them profitable, our ideas, our husbands would really support, you know, our time together. But what has always stopped us in the past was fear. And I know everybody here knows that. You have this great idea, and right behind it, before you can even go a step further, that inner voice says, you might fail, you'll look stupid, you don't have the money, what if you're not successful, what would people think? And we decided that we didn't want to do that anymore. And so we made this agreement, and that's that when fear raised its face, which it did, every day, we would acknowledge it, we'd call it by name, and then as best we could, we would take one step over that fear. And so we got home, and about 3 weeks later, we were in conversation with a publisher. We made this proposal to them, and we looked around the room about halfway through the proposal, and everybody was crying, and we thought, this idea. And I'll never forget, the publisher stood up and he said, it's a delight to meet you. We'll get a contract to your publisher or to your attorney. And we both said, great. And we walked out and looked at each other and said, what attorney? So, you know, we were absolutely on our way. Didn't know where we were going, terrified, but we were on our way. So we were launched on this project. And less than a year later, the book was published. And one of the things that I learned from that, especially around this called by name idea, is that when God has an idea and he wants us to do something, we need to listen to him because he's going to go ahead of us and he's going to open the doors. This was never our project, ever. And so what we thought is these, and what turned out to be true, is that these common threads would probably illuminate treasures in ordinary life that were often overlooked. And I think one of the greatest gifts for me was this learning the kind of common ground that we all as human beings can stand on. Because we found ourselves coming into contact with communities that we might not normally touch in our everyday lives and were uneasy in entering those communities. But what we found is that when we entered that community on this project, we stood on this common ground of love for our children. And probably the greatest example of that was the day I spent in prison. We had thought it would be really important to hear from a woman who had made not so good choices. So I called this prison, finally got a warden or director of this woman's prison to talk to me, and she had a very gruff voice. And I thought, this is a really touchy-feely project for a prison. And it turned out she was a closet poet, and how she spoke with her daughter was through poetry. And she said, I would love for you to come and interview some of the moms. So the day dawned for me to go, and I put on my typical uniform, jeans, white t-shirt, tennis shoes. Get there, I start working my way through the security gates. The last gate, the guy looks at me, and he kind of looks up and down. He says, you're wearing the official prisoner's uniform, and if they have a lockdown, you can't go home. And I thought, well, they'll do the laundry, they'll do the cooking. I'm going to be okay for a little while. But not really. He gave me these sweats and I pulled them on. But it was the most remarkable day because as I visited with those women, what I found was their love for their daughters was exactly the same as mine. And they wanted their children to make better choices and to live authentic lives. And it was one of those gifts in the midst of life that I didn't expect to get in this project, and I found it in a very unlikely place. So what are some of those common threads? Probably one of the ones that came out again and again is the importance of recognizing our unique value. And when you think about the theme of God calling us by name, that unique value is God-given to each of us, and each one of us adds to the world what nobody else can. And the woman in the book who really illustrates this, her name is Marion, and she was the first woman to be ordained in the Anglican Church of Australia, right, of Australia. And she writes her letter to, I'm not going to read all the letter, but I want to give you a quote from it. She says, to dear Ruth and all my daughters and to all who are on the threshold of life. She said, if I have learned anything through my life or through my ministry, it is that God calls us to be fully ourselves. to be the person whom God created, and to be that person in every role. There is no such thing as a wife or a mother. There is only Ruth and Susan and Marion and Kate, who remain Ruth and Susan, Marion and Kate, whether they be wives or mothers or employees or managers. The most important goal in life is to find yourself and then to never lose it. The most important goal in life is to find yourself and then to never lose it. It has to be a tattoo, a bumper sticker. And when I say find, I know when she says find yourself, it's not in the context of being 42 years old, buying a Porsche, and going off to find yourself. It's in the context of finding out who you truly are and what that means for your life of service to yourself, to those around you, and to the world. So when you think, one of the questions, I guess two questions I'd like to pose to you is, how do you think that we find ourselves? What is that? What is it that we have to do to find ourselves? That authentic self.
I haven't done it yet.
Anybody have any thoughts how you do that? How do you find who you are?
I think you have to stop and think about your dreams again, which sometimes you forget about.
Okay, think about your dreams.
And figure out what they are.
Right. Okay.
By each experience that you go through, that you reflect on it and learn from it and grow from it.
Yeah.
And therefore, finding yourself through that.
Yeah, it's a, and what that says is that it's a constant process. It's not a, oh, now I know who I am kind of thing. Okay?
I think also through those life experiences, we find out who we're not. And it's, at least for me, I've been in a number of places where this doesn't fit.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make it fit. I'm trying to make it work, and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
This isn't me.
And I think there's times in our life when we ignore that voice, and sometimes we're in a position where maybe even we have to survive for a brief period of time. Anybody else? Any other thoughts?
Another thing is, what are you passionate about? What is it that really turns your crank, that gives you energy and, it just, could do forever.
Yeah, okay. Anything,
I think to simplify our lives as much as we possibly can. I think each layer we take off, this superfluous
stuff.
Yeah. We find out more who we are.
And this is, this is such a great place to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Knowing whose I am.
Knowing whose I'm
chosen, as Isaiah talked about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's, formed. So it's from that, I keep coming to that point of various turns in my life.
Yeah, those things.
And I know that, and that is the best.
There's a real mindfulness about it. I like what you said about with each experience you need to reflect.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's one of those things that's so easy to, in the rush of life, to leave behind.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the times in my life where I've made some headway in answering the question is times getting away, like you're saying, getting away from the rush, the bombardment of everyday life.
Yeah.
Like coming to a cold and spending time alone somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you just need to ask me who you are. Because I know. The tools to doing that I think, and I know that Tom has done this a lot, I think, in your times away, is writing.
Mm.
There is a lot that comes out in writing that doesn't necessarily, we don't take the time to really glom onto it in our kind of just our thought process. And so writing on a continual basis can be a great way to do that. Anything else?
It seems like sometimes the time just has to be right. You can hear something over and over again, and then just sometimes it just sinks in. So there's a timing issue. Mm-hmm. I hear all these people saying, they're finding themselves in their 40s. I think for a lot of people, that is a time when they finally reflect back on what they've been doing, and they're maybe secure enough, they're not chasing after income or family that they're starting to have the things that they want, and they start to need less. I don't need those high heels.
Right.
I don't need those suits. I can make do with what I have.
Right. So here's a question kind of based off of that is how... I know that for my daughters, I want them to learn this lesson before they're 4 years old, and to understand more of who they are and make choices that are reflective of who God has created them to be now versus, and I think some of that is maturity, but what are some things that we can do as parents and as a step ahead that we can help them maybe learn that earlier?
Coming from the opposite role as the daughter, I don't think it's something that my mom can tell me.
Okay.
The way I found that out, that I made that a goal in my life, is to find out who I am entirely.
Yeah.
And that's because an amazing experience happened with God.
Mm.
And I think only words can be so much. It's more of something that needs to happen. So you make that change.
Make that change.
Yeah.
So it happens internally.
Exactly.
One of the most important things we can do is to be the kind of person that we want our daughters to see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a daughter too, like most of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And seeing a positive mother who attacked life, the goods and the bads, with such a positive attitude has influenced me completely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She knew who she was and what was good and what was bad.
Yeah.
And so the most important thing I think we can do is to be that model.
Yeah. That's really good, yes?
I started out in college majoring in child development, and so at the age of 19, one of the most memorable lines that I have from those 4 years is a teacher that said, the best thing you can be for children is yourself, the authentic you, and you talked about authenticity.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good reminder of that lesson, and that, you know, that's just, I learned that. You know, that age when I was trying to figure some of those things out. But so it's trying to keep that listening in and being true to that ourselves. That's
awesome.
Okay. I have two kids, two teenagers, and I think that certainly when I was growing up, I was in a boarding school. I certainly didn't find my gifts, or I'm still struggling, but. And it's been a real joy to see them find the gifts that they have and felt, and I don't know how to change, but they are really so much further ahead than I was at that age. That's giving them a lot of strength.
Okay.
Well, I have with my daughter, I actually kind of try to stay out of it. I try to encourage her, but I always tell her that God's equipped her with specific gifts, and she needs to listen to her own heart and who she knows herself to be, and ask God to reveal to her what He wants her to do.
Yeah.
I really, you know, just try to just not put any expectations on her as to what she'll do when she comes up.
Right.
So.
Okay, that's really good. Yeah.
I really don't know if any of my ideas work, but I like to see our daughter go places where I know there are other women or young women that are good role models,
mm-hmm.
and that they'll be an arena for discussion, because sometimes she's really closed at home,
mm-hmm.
and I believe that we need to verbalize. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm really thrilled when there's a teacher that really has a lot of discussion, and I try to watch for what sort of folks she's with. And then I just pray like crazy, you know, and it might be working, because she'll come back, like, from camp and say, well, so-and-so, you know, this is what they think, and na-na-na-na-na, and we talked about this, and some of the things I've said before, you know, but... but I really don't know how it's going to turn out, but that's just an idea.
Yeah, that's good. Christine.
I was just going to say a similar thing. I think one of the greatest gifts of my mother and father to me was a community.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big extended family and deep involvement in caring congregations. And since my mom has said sometimes too that she realized she couldn't be everything. For, she had four daughters, has four daughters, and she couldn't be everything for us. We were different from each other and different from her. But she tried to help us have communities I'm just kind of seconding what you were saying.
Yeah, that's really good. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think another thing, and I agree with everything that's been said too, is that you take time to know your child. You know that proverb, train up a child in the way he or she should go. And what that means is in the way that they're meant.
Yeah.
That you don't try to force your will on them, but you know them, and you can't like you were saying, you can't give answers to
right.
them. But just sort of have a pathway, you know, show them a light so that they have a direction to go.
Great. Bruce.
I think a key, from my perspective, is the permission to explore. And the lack of judgment and failure, the ability to kind of be and to try new things and try different things and to be different things at different times in their lives, so that they have some kind of sense that when they reach a point where they really need to make the choice as to who they are, that they have some options to choose.
Yeah, that exploration, but also that freedom to fail. And to know that failure is not only a part of life, it's an important part of life. You learn so much from that. Okay. Anybody else? Did you have something else? No. Okay. All right. Thank you. I walk out of here with so much. Thank you for bringing that. There's one of the other themes that came out, and I think is one of the greatest gifts of everyday life that is available every day, is the gift of forgiveness. There's the overall gift of forgiveness that God gives us, and that is something that we experience in one sense, kind of the big sense sometimes, when we come to know Him. But there's also day in and day out forgiveness, and we experience His forgiveness on a daily basis. And one of the women in the book that shines such a light on that, her name was Catherine. And her story is that she was adopted out at birth. And she struggled her entire life with that choice that her birth mother chose to give her up. And she struggled with self-esteem issues and abandonment and anger and frustration and unforgiveness. And then she had her own daughters. And she said that was the beginning of her healing. And her letter, I just want to again read you kind of a brief quote. She says, "Now I realize that I needed both of you to begin the healing of my own shattered heart. From the moment I knew I was pregnant, I loved you deeply in a way I had longed from my birth mother. I have not been a perfect mother, but I have always cherished you, guided you, believed in you, and stood by you. It is the promise I made at your birth. It is the promise I make to you for the rest of my life." And in that, she really is forgiving herself for not always being a perfect mom. Mm-hmm. But what I remember is when I received this letter, I called her to thank her because it was such a poignant letter and addressed an issue that was so important. And she said, you know, if you use it in the book, great. But she said, "This has been such a gift to me because by writing this letter, I have begun to understand that choice that my birth mother made was perhaps the most loving thing she could have ever done for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm beginning to forgive her." Mm-hmm. And she actually ended up writing a letter to her birth mother and sending it to her kind of after this. And they were going to begin to try and reestablish their relationship. Well, about a year and a half after the book came out, we had the opportunity to speak at the Northwest Women's Show, which is kind of a nightmare. 10,000 people, 20,000 people, huge forum. It's hot. There's stages all over. And so we were up on the stage. Christine and I are up there, and we're giving our spiel. And I come to this place where I'm going to say, "Let me tell you about," and it wasn't Catherine. I never talked about Catherine. And just as I'm saying, "Let me tell you about this," little voice sings in and says, "Tell them about Catherine." And I thought, and I've learned to listen to that voice. I have learned to listen, but I knew that if I changed what I was going to do, it would change. Christine would have to react to that. But we have this trust thing, and I just kind of looked at her, you know, "Please go with me here." And I looked out at the crowd, and I said, "Let me tell you about Catherine." So I told her story. And I got done and I thought, I don't know why I did that, but you know, I did. And I did what I was supposed to do, and so that's all I need to worry about. So about 20 minutes later, we're standing at the booth, signing books and talking to people, and up walk this couple, this two women, a woman about my age and an older woman. And we looked at her and said, gosh, you're a diehard, you were here yesterday, how can you do this 2 days in a row? And she said, well, it's just really a good chance to spend some time with my mom. And so we launched into, isn't it great to spend time with your mom, and it's so fun to be at things like this together, at which point the older woman started to cry. And this woman kind of put her arm around this older woman and said, well, you know, this is my birth mom. I met her here today for the first time. And I remember at that moment, I mean, I kind of call those goosebump stories. But again, when God calls us to do something, he has a reason. And I think one of the things that we need to learn to do is to listen and follow when it comes, even if it doesn't make sense. And I kind of, I mean, I think God kind of had a sense of humor. Up on a stage in front of a whole lot of people, Molly, I'm kind of busy right now. But I think that interrupts our kind of everyday life, our ordinary or seemingly important tasks, and says, I want you to come be part of the gift. I want you to come celebrate here with me. So, again, I think another question I guess I'd like to pose is, how do we become more, how do we tune in to that voice that God is wanting us to be available? How do we do that in the midst of our frantic lives? And I think, I don't want to make a gender statement here, but men tend to be more, I'd love to hear from the men as well, because men tend to be a little more linear in their thought process and focus. And women are so used to hearing 10,000 voices all the time anyway that we listen to, you know, but so I'd love to hear from the men on this as well as the women. How do we tune into God talking to us in the middle of the day?
I want to know the answer to that because you're saying you hear this. I'm going, when, how do you hear it?
Yeah.
I've always wanted to go, Beth, hey, yeah, you, not me, you know, here's what I want you to do. Keep waiting for that, but I don't hear it.
Okay.
How do you hear it?
What do you guys think?
I think you stop and you're grateful for everything you see. Whether you're driving down the freeway and you're in a traffic jam. I have this little thing. I don't know where I got it. I have some magazine and it's like 10 things I'm grateful for. And just one that comes to mind is I'm grateful for having to walk clear across a parking lot a mile because at least I got a spot to park, and I'm going to this wonderful event. It reminds me not to be looking at each and everything like, oh, I wish this were a little different. Or
right. So having eyes of gratitude,
exactly,
and in being present, cognizant of the moment. Okay. Anybody else? Other thoughts? Yeah.
You know, having come through 5 years of really domestic terribleness, it came to me about a year ago that happiness was my choice. And so every day I choose to get up and be happy in spite of everything else that's crappy. Mm-hmm. Now, you ask my children who they want to live with. And when you make the decision to be happy, I can even say, okay, I'm going to praise God right here because I have dishes to do, because in fact I have dishes to do, mm-hmm. which means we had a meal to eat. Mm-hmm. And changing that thinking around, I will tell you, it is really hard to praise God when the toilet's backing up. Okay? Or when, once again, I'm late for work because someone didn't like what he was wearing and chose to change at the last minute. But in making that choice, and that's not to say it's perfect all the time, it's far from it. It's like reminding myself every day, I've chosen to be happy, I've chosen to leave this marriage, I've chosen to raise these children. And what better gift could I give them? And so in our evening prayers every night, what we do is we start our prayer with, what are you thankful for today? You can't say the rest of it until you've said one thing. And sometimes it's, I'm thankful mom stopped yelling at me because I didn't make my bed, you know. And that's been really helpful to me. And you know what? You really get to where it's like, that floor's never going to be clean, so we might as well let the dog clean the kitchen floor. She does a better job and all those things. And your kids are laughing, going, the dog cleans our floor, just, you know, we tell everybody. So it's kind of like getting into that.
Right, know? Absolutely.
Because what are your kids going to remember? That's the best perspective I'm coming from. Yes. That you're a stressed out, martyred mess.
Yeah.
Or you choose to lower your thresholds. And if you don't look below eye level, it works real good.
That's great. Anybody else? How do you hear and respond? Do you have any other thoughts?
You have to listen. And by that, I by nature, I'm talkative when I pray. Mm-hmm. So I have a running monologue of keep us safe, keep my daughter safe,
right?
Keep my husband safe, you know, bless our marriage. And right. I just kind of rattle on and on, and it's really hard to get a word in there. But doing some centering prayer where you can just even take 5 minutes to listen. Mm-hmm. That doesn't come natural to me.
Yeah. I think it probably doesn't come natural to most of us. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't come natural to most of us. So building some time, what I hear you saying is kind of building some time in just for listening.
Just for listening. Mm-hmm. Just to breathe in the Holy Spirit and just to listen to what it...
Yeah.
Okay. One thing for me is to remember that I'm showing up in God's world. He's not showing up in my world. Mm-hmm. No. He's already here.
Yeah.
Waiting for me to see, and if you have that more of that perspective each day, you're more likely to hear.
Yeah.
And see the people that he's
calling you to. Yeah. Okay.
I think that some of the best things I've done in my life for myself, I haven't known at the time that God was calling me to do them. I just had a gut feeling for, you know. I didn't even think about that, but then later on I realized. But it wasn't like, oh, God is telling me this right at that moment. It just, I just had a feeling, and like, it's always true.
Yeah.
So I assume that must have been guiding me.
I think to keep the awareness alive and to really listen, for me, is through meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Because that really is when I am feeling in one with God, and nobody can distract me.
Right.
Because distraction is through daily things is what makes us almost blind, you know?
Yes.
So we can't even, like, even if he's screaming at us, it's like we're just taking our fingers and holding it to our ears. But when we're centering ourselves and focusing, mm-hmm. then it's different.
Sharing the linear side.
Okay.
Because part of for me is prior to doing something significant, either my job or at home or anywhere, to take a couple minutes before that and just center and to ask God to be with me.
Yeah.
And then go with confidence that I am a child of God and that God's promise is to be with me.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, as I go, that there's a sort of authenticity, I guess, maybe, in terms of being who I am.
Yeah.
And knowing that God, not that I'm doing right, but that there's a centering of it that's real helpful.
Well, just being mindful of the fact that we are, you know, I love what you said, we're in God's world, and that I'm a child of God and an instrument. I mean, we're who he uses. And so to be aware of that and move through your day with that perspective, but it's so easy to leave that perspective behind because of the frenetic pace that we all lead. And, you know, I say, I heard this little voice. I mean, I think maybe I'm thicker than most, and so God knows I need to hear something a little more. No, I don't know. But I think we pay attention to messages that recur, and I think God does that through people that know and love us. I know that we all know people who you look at them and we know they're making a choice that is not good, and you go to them in love, and several people do, and they ignore it. And I actually have a brother kind of going through that right now, and one time I just adore him. And I said to him, he said, well, I'm really praying about it. And I said, how do you think God talks to you? You know, people that have your best interest at heart, that love God and love you, and they're coming to you and saying this, and you're saying, I'm praying about it, I think you've already been answered here. So paying attention. And I, the other thing I think about is then acting upon that. And it's a trust issue. You act on it once, and then you go, you know what? I'm learning to trust that intuition. And so when I hear it more, I'm going to do it some more. Yeah.
That comes. I was going to share a couple of things. I have a prayer in the morning that I like to pray, that I will look at every circumstance within my life as a particular dealing of God with my soul. And for me, God speaks to me most often through other people, events, you know. So it's just kind of beholding God sitting at his feet in meditation and prayer and inquiring, really having kind of a seeking mind and going out, that you know, and just with attention at what God is going to bring to you today.
Yeah, and to follow up on that, you know, when I've done that, praying for guidance, you know, through the day, it comes in many different ways. Maybe I'll hear something on the radio, or maybe, you know, something I read in the newspaper, or maybe something that someone says to me. But it's what you said about being mindful and just learning to listen to all voices that you hear.
Yeah. One of the prayers I really learned, brief statement from Tom, actually, is we pray this often, is to help us make choices that honor you. And so if we look at each choice and think just quickly, you know, what is it that would honor who I am, God's created me to be, and what would honor God, the choices become much more clear a lot of times. The other common thread that came up again and again and again was unconditional love, which is so the need as human beings for unconditional love and acceptance. And it goes two ways. You know how God calls us to love others as we love ourselves. And so to me, the way that's said, I need to learn to love myself first. Otherwise, I'm going to love other people how I love myself. And if I'm critical and not accepting of who I am, that's going to be how I am to others. And we learned this lesson in a very unlikely place. It was from a woman named Lori. And she taught me such a lesson about unconditional love for herself. Lori was living with AIDS, had three children, and she wrote her letter based on the fact that she knew her children were facing a future without her. They'd already lost their father to AIDS, and now they were going to lose her. And what she explained to us is that it was that her children were very angry, and they were angry at the disease of AIDS. And she said to them, don't be angry at that, because she said the real culprit in this is the disease of alcoholism and no self-worth. And I made bad choices. But what she told us, and she says this in her letter, is that through coming to grips with AIDS, she finally came to love and accept herself, every part of herself. And she says, I guess that I hated myself more than anyone else. I always felt that I was unworthy somehow. It has only been through this process of dealing with AIDS that I have come to accept myself. I try to love each part, even the bad, because that is me. If there is any lesson I would want to leave with you, it is to love yourself. Find peace with who you are and don't look outside yourself for acceptance and love. Find it deep within you and treasure it always. When you love yourself like that, you will know the kind of love I will always have for you. That's just, just is such a significant quote to me. And one of the things I think we all know is we have parts of ourselves that if we had our way, we'd really like it if people didn't see that about us. I mean, I know I do. And I can remember a few years ago, I was spending a little time with a therapist, and we had just become a blended family. And So there were some issues around that. But we were talking about me and talking about, she said, what is it that you absolutely don't want people to know about you? And she started listing things off. And finally she said that you're spoiled. And my whole, I mean, I almost threw up and fell on the floor. It was so clear to me that, and I'm the baby of the family. Everybody was, you know, quite a ways ahead of me. So while they went camping, I went to Hawaii. I mean, I hear it all the time from my siblings. And the deal is, it's kind of like a kid, you know, a little kid that sits in the middle of the room and goes, you can't see me. That part of us that we don't want anybody to know. And I shared that, you know, with Tom, and I shared it with my best friend. And they go, well, yeah. So, you're spoiled. And so, how do we learn to, not that you know, build that side up, but how do we learn to put our arm around that part of ourselves that we really... Like, how do we learn to do that?
She's the
12
baby.
Are you the 12 baby? We'll talk. It's a great place.
I don't have a problem with that.
But those parts that, you know, you just don't like, so you push them down, I think those really cripple us. What we need to do is turn the light on them. So how do you do that? You know, again, what kind of things do you guys think of? Well, maybe nothing. Anybody want to share theirs? I love this girl. I mean, we have to talk some more. Yeah.
Keep it exposed, but because obviously it's an insecurity and it's a vulnerability. You're vulnerable, so. If you keep it exposed to a person to let it out, it'll have more time to play with it. Like mine, physically, is hair. Like my body hair and stuff. And so the summer, I'm like, that's it.
I'm letting it out.
Because once I get this covered, then I will no longer have any insecurities physically.
Yeah,
and so
awesome.
It's like, keep it exposed in the sense of, you know, but you could also do that eternally too, you know,
well,
by talking about, yeah, I'm spoiled.
That is fabulous. Wow. Thank you.
I think, right, you know, the explosive happened when one of my sons was so angry at me, but it was very upsetting to him because he was really angry and he was, so it was making it all worse. And finally, I said, do you know what, Paul? It's all right to be angry at me. He looked at me and said, what? I said, it's all right to be angry at me. I said, you know, there's times I'm very angry at you. But what you have to remember is I may be angry, but I still love you from the bottom of my heart and will always do it. So that's it. You know, he looked at it and it was just like a turnaround that he could be allowed to do these things and it was still all right.
All right.
Great.
So
they need to, just like
you said, you need to bring it out and tell them they can do this.
Yeah, that's great.
Anybody
else? Yeah.
I was having a talk with one of my 9-year-old just a few weeks ago, some insecurities that he was having, and it was interesting because I recognized them as some of my own same ones, and we had a conversation about how God could use that in his life too. Does it make him more compassionate to those kinds of things than other people? It was interesting. I could have the talk with him, and then I walked away saying to myself, listen to what your son came up with.
Yeah. Well, I think too, when we, like you say, when we bring up the light, when we say it's okay, when we listen, we give other people permission to do that too, and it's kind of a ripple effect. You know, that you begin to accept those things. Okay, one more. The unconditional love going the other way. So, though, again, I mean, I have learned so much from these women, and the woman who taught, I know both of us, and has taught women all over, about unconditional love for others is a woman named Wendy. And Wendy's the mother of Jamie, and Jamie was born with a very rare degenerative disease that was so rare that the doctor said, if you have another baby, you will never, 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 never have a child with this disease. So they had another child who was healthy, and then they had a son who had this same disease. And it was a disease that would require, one, a lifetime of care for their parents, but two, their children would degenerate and die at a young age. And so Wendy had to make this choice with these children, that people told them to put the kids in a facility. And she said, no, these are my children that I love. And she made this commitment that I'm going to love them unconditionally. And for those of us that have any children, the idea of losing them earlier than we expect is about the most unbearable prospect you can have. And she has loved these kids without all those milestones a lot of us take for granted. First words, first steps. Wendy got her first kiss from Jamie when Jamie was 16. And Wendy's this little itty-bitty thing, about 5'2". Jamie weighed more than she did. She'd, you know, lug her around, haul her around. And she says, I don't even need to read this. If I could give you health and heal your disease, I would sacrifice all. But what I can do is give you unconditional love and wait until we can walk and talk and do all the things that mothers and daughters do together in heaven one day. And what she would tell you is it was her choice to love her children unconditionally that allowed her to do this. And a couple of years ago, we got a phone call that Jamie had died pretty suddenly in her sleep. And Christine went to the service, and in the eulogy, the service was, in the eulogy, the letter was really the heart, this letter that Wendy had written to Jamie was the heart of the service. And other people had written letters to her, her brother, her cousin, her dad, they read these letters at the church. And afterwards, she came up to Christine and she said, you know, I need to thank you. I thought that I was writing that letter for Jamie. I was writing it for myself because I will always have this. And about, we had this opportunity to go on this dorky, literally dorky national television show. You guys remember the Carol and Marilyn show, the mommies? Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we were gonna go on that and we invited 6 moms to come down with us, and Wendy and Jamie were one to come down. Went down to Hollywood, you know, it was very exciting. And Wendy called us the night before, this was obviously when Jamie was still alive, and said, you know, I have to ask you, I'm afraid that this is going to be too difficult. I think that she might embarrass you. She seizures. I don't want to make anyone uncomfortable. And you said, you know, we want you to come because you are going to touch the lives of thousands, millions of women who have disabled kids. Please come. So we get to this deal, and it's hot. There's food. There's people all over. We're in the green room. And we'd been there for a couple hours, we hadn't gone on yet, and Jamie started to seizure. And Wendy was, you know, stroking her and taking her outside and cleaning her up. And pretty soon the producer came and he said, you know, we're not gonna use her. She's too noisy, she's too disruptive, it wouldn't be good for her, it wouldn't be good for you. It wouldn't be good for us, it wouldn't be good for you. And he walked away. And we thought, you know, that is just not okay with us. And so we kind of walked after him and took his arm and said, she's come here for a purpose, and she is going to touch the lives of millions of women. Please don't say no yes yet. Just give her a chance. And then Christine and I kind of went off to a corner and mustered every prayer we could. And then we were busy with our own kids, and all of a sudden we looked up, and there they were on stage. And for 5 minutes, Jamie's face was up and bright, and she didn't seizure. And we just knew again, you know, that God had done this miracle that needed to be told. And, you know, Wendy, think about God calling my name. I mean, God chose Wendy. I don't know, chose Wendy, but knew that Wendy could handle this. And so this message of unconditional love, I think, is probably the deepest part of living an authentic life and allowing others to live an authentic life. And one of the things I guess I'd like for you to think about while you're here this week and kind of have the opportunity to do is to kind of travel through your life, your day, and look at those areas in your life where you've maybe let go of the joy of the ordinary, and see if you can go home with kind of a new view to recapture that. I want to talk a little bit about what's coming up, and tonight has been kind of a broad overview and lots of storytelling, and the next four sessions are much more introspective for you, I think. So I would, if you come, bring a pencil and paper. Each session is complete in and of itself, so come to one, come to all, don't come, you know, whatever. But if you come, bring a paper and pencil. And what we're going to be delving into are those things that keep us from finding the joys of everyday life and that keep us from hearing God's call. And what we've identified in tomorrow we'll talk about fear, how fear stops us, and kind of what do we do with that. The next night is called Lightening Your Load. It's that, you know, unburdening your inner and outer self of some of the things that no longer serve you and moving forward differently. The third night is about redefining for yourself what matters the most, and then kind of looking at your life and saying, so if this is what matters the most, how does my life, you know, are those two things in sync? And then the fourth one is kind of a new one that we've added, but it's about living with grace. And I learned about that one in a pretty unusual place. This last year I lost both my mom and my dad, and my oldest daughter went to college kind of right in succession. And going through that experience of loss was big, but I learned a lot about living with grace through that process. And so we'll kind of use that as a filter and talk about that. So I've loved your input. Thank you for being generous with that. Are there questions or thoughts or anything else anybody wants to say? Okay.
Molly,
yeah.
How did you find the people that wrote your letters?
Yeah.
What
we did is we came up with a list of issues that we felt were pretty timeless. And then we would seek women who would write letters from that perspective. So all the letters are authentic, genuine letters, but all but one were written at our request. Mm-hmm. And we'd seek, you know, women who could write from that perspective. And going to prison, we stopped people in the grocery store. You know, and we'd go on through and I'd go talk to her. We used articles. I'd seen an article in the newspaper about a meeting for Holocaust survivors. And I called and asked if I could attend that meeting and bring this project to them, and they invited me, and a woman from that group agreed to write a letter. So we networked, we traveled, and people were so generous. We got about between 200 and 300 letters, and there are 42, I think, in the book. So,
what was your career choice before you started?
Mm-hmm. I worked for Nordstrom. I did. I was a human resources manager for them. So I've been for a long time. Yeah. So glad to be gone. And Tom's personals ad, I said that I met him through a personals ad. In his ad, he said, I have much more of an L.L. Bean than Nordstrom lifestyle. And I thought, I have got to address this right from the beginning. So I called him back and said, well, you know, I work for Nordstrom, but I have an L.L. Bean lifestyle. Anything else? I did write a letter. Yeah, I was a single mom for a lot of years and had left a pretty emotionally abusive letter, and so it kind of had to do with that step as a single mom. You know, it was interesting as we got the letters, and these letters were so significant and so poignant. I sat down to write mine and felt so insignificant. I struggled and tried to make it perfect, and finally Christine kind of slapped me and said, knock that off and write what you know. What do you know? What do you have to tell your kids that nobody else can tell them? And once I kind of got there, I was able to do it. But that's been a very special thing for the three of us to share.
And it's in the bookstore.
It's in the bookstore. Yeah. That was a paid announcement by there isn't a neat thing about the book, and that's there's a place in the back where you can write your own letter. So it becomes a pretty neat gift to give to somebody. And it's getting close to out of print. I mean, I'm surprised they were able to find it. At least that's what we think. So I'm not independently wealthy from, you know, this. So if you buy one more, it won't make any difference. So do not feel compelled to buy one. Okay. Thank you. Ice cream. Soon. Yeah, I want to keep the house too. Yeah. Just the outside.
So one more book would do.
Process where it comes out.
He has to
really, we both have done
a person that we
look at.
we both have also let go of climbable stuff.
And we look to be
I'm not very good at being disciplined doing this
thing. There is no
capacity,
even if you can do it, let's just put it all
I sometimes find my best time.
Children and cousins and mommies, they're eating. There just is no resentment, there's just no physical resentment. And you would just think that
we anyway, can we'll try.
He has two brothers, and they have children, all of their children, but there is no her feature of her children. So, for me,
I heard it's so
cool. I don't know, it's interesting. But that was, that may still be stewing when I came back.
Thank you so much.
We had asked her.
You said,
number one, do you really pursue this search for a better really do this. And two, maybe this is the time to just pause and wait.
Thank you, sir.
Very good.
Thanks. We kind of just ripped through that wine last night, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah. Wow.
I think your wine's all gone. We still got some more, so we'll have another
one. No, no,
We'll bring it out a bottle of it.
That's a great thing.
Just age peers, and they'll enjoy it if some of the younger generation, they will share with them, and when it's done, it's done.
Yes. Well, Suzanne, it's good to have you in our
class. Good to be here.
That's great. Now, where are you, what school?
I'm in Evergreen at Burton.
Okay, yeah. Burton, isn't it out where we kind of by that big soccer field out there, not too far? Do you know Becky and Daryl, administrators Becky and Daryl? They go to our church, and we've been in a kind of loosely now in a small group with them.
Since we're in the Vancouver School District, we haven't had much crossover in Evergreen.
Is tomorrow? We're both
at 3:45.
3:45, yeah.
There's a teaching staff meeting at Paul and Schillick after Esther's time, and spouses are invited.
I'd like to see the slides on Paul, the track through the Paul.
Okay, that's fine. So, I understand that. I would too. I really would too, but right. I think I need to go to that.
I think that was, thank you. I knew that was kind of coming under my. I
knew it was sometime too, and I haven't seen it on the schedule. Yeah. Call it says tonight.
Right.
After this much time.
Yeah. So it's family
here at
Harvard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's every time. I know it isn't a story. You know what a story is. What do you think of that?
It's so good.